This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor of Texas Scorecard. The border, what is going on there and what is the state actually doing? This is the biggest question I've been getting. We're going to speak with former ICE agent Victor Avila in just a moment. But first, I've got Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent here, to talk about something that ended this week, which was the third legislative special session.
That's right. We've had the regular session, 140 days, right? January to May. You've had now three special legislative sessions. It ended in the kind of early hours, Tuesday morning, two mixed results, as they all kind of have, I guess. But yeah, officially ended Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning, early hours, and, you know, this was this third special session. We've now seen a number of them, right? We don't really have time to go through all the history of what those have looked like, but this third special session on items that Governor Abbott put on there started out with a small agenda. That agenda kind of continued to grow as the days and weeks went on. How did those items fare?
Sure. So to your point, it started with five items, and then over the kind of the 4 weeks that was the third special session, five additional items were added on there. So a total of 10. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, on Tuesday morning, it became apparent that only six of the 10 would officially kind of get accomplished, if you will. I say there's four, but really two of them were similar, right? Uh-huh. One, the original of the ones that failed, there was one that was originally dealing with vaccine mandates, but it was whether local and state government, right, can address or can mandate vaccinations for COVID-19. And if so, right, what exemptions should exist? That never got taken care of. And then notably an additional agenda item, it was added, I guess, almost 3 weeks into the special session, was dealing with employer vaccine mandates, which of course also did not get across the finish.
Well, it was added to, I mean, I think when you talk about employer vaccine mandates, this was an issue that was added, to your point, in like the final week. I mean, the legislature had about a week left in the special session. Doesn't mean that they can't do stuff quickly, right? We certainly saw some of that. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was an issue that was put on there at the last minute that didn't pass either chamber. And now people are calling for more of that. Again, we'll talk about that more, but other items that didn't pass.
Sure. There was the, again, later added agenda item of re-increasing the penalty for illegal voting, right? So very quick background. You may recall that during the second special session, they finally passed the election integrity legislation, you know, number one priority of the Texas GOP. Notably, it looked different than it did in the regular session when the first quorum break happened, all of that sort of stuff. But when they passed it, grassroots activists actually highlighted, because it seemed like no one else was talking about the fact that there was an amendment that was accepted in the House. Both chambers, right, eventually accepted the overall bill, but an amendment that was accepted in the House that lowered the penalty for illegal voting, and making a lot of people question, how is it that we're going to prosecute?
This is election integrity, but now it's a misdemeanor instead of a felony to illegally vote.
So Abbott added that, I guess, 2 weeks into, maybe a week and a half into, it was early October, added that to the special session agenda, and notably that went nowhere. The Senate very quickly passed a fix for it. Just loitered in the House. House referred all the bills to a committee, never got a hearing. To the credit of Speaker Phelan, he did say that he was not interested in relitigating the issue, and he followed through.
And certainly wasn't. As well, just kind of briefly, that bail reform constitutional amendment as well failed. Again, same bill, failed on just about the same margin.
Right.
So not really a surprise there. One thing that you often hear from lawmakers, and I know that folks watching have probably heard this if they've spoken to their House member, their Senate member about some of these priorities, is that they ran out of time. And yet we saw an example on the final night of this third special session that really, I think, completely erases that as an excuse.
Absolutely.
Where you saw the House and Senate work together to rush through in a matter of about just a few hours, completely new legislation to raise the homestead exemption for property taxes.
Right. So my understanding is negotiations between the House and Senate had broken down on kind of the only property tax relief bill that was moving through the legislative process That was Senate Bill 1. It had broken down. So what you saw is in this like last-ditch effort, Senator Paul Bettencourt out of Houston filed Senate Joint Resolution, I believe 2 is what it was. And ultimately what that did is it increased the homestead, the amount of the homestead exemption from that at $25,000 to $40,000, mm-hmm. right? They're pitching that as this is, you know, property tax relief. And within a matter of an hour and a half, it passed through the Senate, right? It got filed, quickly heard in a hearing, got passed through the Senate unanimously. And then the House like suspended all necessary rules to make it to where they could instantly refer it, instantly hear it. And they brought it up and it passed unanimously. Mm-hmm. And it actually comes out to, the calculation comes out to, I think it's about $176 mm-hmm. worth of property tax relief going into the future, which is less mm-hmm. than the bills that were originally moving through the process.
Well, and not only that, but about $176 in that first year, and then, you know, increases in appraisals and property tax
sure.
rates will pretty much swallow that up
sure.
Going forward. So not really an ongoing way to eventually alleviate tax and
the
burden.
It's worthwhile to note, right? I think the last homestead exemption was in 2015 and they had raised it, I think it was from 15 to 25,000, raised it $10,000. And that was like, that provided no relief. It was like instantly swallowed up,
yeah.
right?
Yes, exactly. And so that was one of those issues, but I think it's, you know, the issue itself aside, it is important to note just how fast both chambers
sure.
were able to move on that. And that's why a lot of grassroots activists right now are speaking up and saying that they want a fourth special session. And you've seen some calls for this continue to increase, starting with as soon as the next day, where you had the Texas Freedom Coalition calling a press conference, having some state representatives there, mm-hmm. like Jeff Kasin leading them, calling for a session to end vaccine mandates.
Right. Yeah. And of course, we had mentioned that this was not something that got done. What was interesting is that before Abbott added the kind of second version of the vaccine mandate language to the agenda, there were, I think it was 22 bills that were filed to address vaccine mandates that went nowhere. Right. Yeah. Didn't even get referred to committees until a few weeks in, and only some of them did. Notably, you had activists then, right, ask. They had held press conferences. They had lawmakers, right, asking that they added to the call. Abbott added employer vaccine mandates. There were two new, completely new bills filed, one in the House and Senate. They got hearings, but never got heard by the overall House or overall Senate in time for, you know, but when the session ended. So that's what prompted this, of course, with the press conference. Notably, to your point, you had some lawmakers that were right next to them asking for it, and then later you had the Texas GOP come out and ask for it.
Yeah, you've also had on Wednesday Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick
yeah.
even calling for a fourth special session on Twitter, specifically focusing on the election integrity aspect, mm-hmm. those missed priorities, no word on vaccine mandates from him. But even that day you had the Republican Party of Texas calling for a special session on vaccine mandates, on the election integrity issues, on child gender modification. And yet Governor Abbott right now mm-hmm. has said, at least his office has said, that there's no need for another special session.
That's right. He responded to Lieutenant Governor Patrick's kind of call for this and basically said we had a conservative session. We got all of these big things done. There's no need to have one.
So here's the question. So can Governor Greg Abbott, because, you know, he is currently, we have seen, is being hit on this issue, not just here at home,
sure.
where you've got, you know, I think most vocally, you've got Don Huffines, his primary opponent, you know, every day, like vocally
yeah.
hitting him on this issue, on his failure on election integrity and his failure to call a special session on vaccine mandates. At the same time, you've got the Florida Governor Ron DeSantis calling a special session on exactly this at the same time that Greg Abbott is saying that it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just wonder, like, is this something that's going to work for the governor?
Sure. I mean, going into, to your point, the 2022 primary election where the governor, of course, has 3 announced challengers. Can he afford not to do it? You've also got other statewide elected officials that might affect, right, kind of down ballot as well as can they afford not to address it? Can Republican lawmakers in general afford not to address it? It is definitely the thing that's being discussed probably the most in local and state, you know, state and national media is the specifically the employer vaccine mandates. Mm-hmm. You have to wonder if politically it creates any issues.
And you wonder, too. I mean, I guess put the governor's race aside. If you're a Republican incumbent right now and you find yourself in a primary election against, you know, maybe a conservative challenger, mm-hmm. that's going to be tough to defend yourself against if you're not out there saying, Sure. Look, we need something to be able to come back and campaign on.
To me, it also begs the question, you may recall, I don't know if we mentioned it, but like when Abbott announced the employer vaccine mandate issue being the addition to the agenda, to coincide with that, he also had an executive order, right, mm-hmm. to address it, prohibiting it, right, with a $1,000 penalty, I think it was, which obviously there's still employers that are, mm-hmm. right, or employees that are having to still face the decision on getting a vaccine or continuing employment. So is that going to be enough, or is the calculation that that's going to be enough to hold just his executive order?
I mean, Rita right now asks a question I think a number of people are probably asking as well, which is, aren't we as taxpayers paying for special sessions and truly not getting what we in Texas want? Certainly an indictment right there on the Republican-controlled legislature. Speaking of elections, though, you do have a little bit of some updates in the election sphere, particularly looking at the Texas House and the Texas Senate. In House District 19, okay, this is the new district that has been drawn in kind of western Travis County, kind of the west part of Austin, going over to Fredericksburg, covering some of that area there. You have former Austin City Councilwoman Ellen Troxclair, right, and Justin Berry, a current Austin police mm-hmm. officer, both running against each other in that seat. And, you know, there's been a lot of drama building up there.
Right. You may recall, so former Austin City Councilwoman Ellen Troxclair had announced back in June that she was running for the Senate District 24, to replace Don Buckingham, who, of course, is running for land commissioner. This is, of course, before redistricting happened. And so as a result, right, to kind of fast forward, as redistricting was happening, it became apparent that she was her residence was not inside the new Senate District 24. So she suspended that campaign and announced for the new House District 19. Justin Berry, who was a former candidate for House District 47, I believe, against Vicki Goodwin, he had originally, I think it was back in March, said he was going to challenge Vicki Goodwin again. Yep. And now it appears that, yes, they are running. He announced he's running for House District 19. What's notable to the drama you talked about is that they had just back in August recorded a video mm-hmm. together where they were supporting each other for their respective races. So it makes
and how, it how quickly life moves, right? Because now you've got Justin Berry accusing Ellen Troxclair of going back on her word.
Sure.
Ellen Troxclair has said that Justin Berry seems entitled to the seat. Right. A really interesting war of words. And this is only two candidates in this field. Mind you, you could see more jump in.
Right.
Especially with an open seat like this.
Sure. I mean, you had State Representative Kyle Biederman announce a few days ago that he is not running again for 73, where they moved House District 73. But he left open the possibility that he might run for House District 19.
He would currently resides in Fredericksburg,
correct,
which is inside this district.
Correct.
So we'll see if that happens. Someone else who's not going to be coming back to the Texas House, though, is Democrat quorum breaker Michelle Beckley,
right,
who bemoaned the fact that, unfortunately, her district now is more Republican, and she wouldn't be able to come back. This is the same representative, however, though, that said that she wanted to run for Congress not too long
that's
ago.
Right. So she's the Carrollton Democrat, right? That's been there. I guess this was her second session to serve. She was a part of these, the majority of the Democrat caucus that busted quorum. Like, I think it was 10 days into the quorum bust, announced that she loved D.C. so much she wanted to run for a congressional seat. She suspended that seat now, mm-hmm. post-redistricting, where we saw the congressional map. She's no longer written into the district that she was originally running for. So she suspended that. She basically bemoaned on Twitter as well that, like, well, what should I run for? Should I run for this? As if she's entitled to run for something. It's
amazing. Amazing the thought process, right, with some of these people. Well, if I can't run for this seat and I can't run for that one, then what position am I supposed to have?
Sure.
Okay, well, it looks like she'll be enjoying maybe some time in the private sector, at least for a little while. Some other legislative retirements. Kel Seliger, Senator, right? Most liberal Republican in the state Senate, somebody who has been a real roadblock to some conservative reforms in the past, including ending taxpayer-funded lobbying or even recently an election audit legislation, announced that he's retiring.
That's right. So you may recall a few weeks back that former President Donald Trump gave an endorsement to one of Seliger's challengers over Seliger. I'm sure that weighed into some of that calculation. But Seliger's been there for a long time. He represents Senate District 31, which for those that aren't familiar is out in West Texas. It's specifically in the Panhandle. It kind of circles Lubbock in that area. And the new Senate District 31 in the proposed maps goes down towards the Midland-Odessa area, kind of encompasses all of that and expands beyond that. And so I'm sure a lot of that weighed into his calculation, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Also, you've got, just real quick, State Representative Dan Huberty announcing his retirement. Not necessarily a surprise, given that there was some rumors about this, or given his DUI arrest earlier this year.
Sure.
But, you know, we've got the 2022 campaign season already on. In fact, actually, we've got a special election right now. If you live in House District 118, which is sort of Eastern Bexar County, San Antonio area. The special election right now is ongoing for between John Lujan and Frank Ramirez. And so we've got an election going on everywhere where people can vote on those constitutional amendments. But if you live there, you've got an extra special.
I think the takeaway, right, for the ongoing, and it's only going to get, you know, hotter and hotter, is there's currently 14 announced, you know, people not seeking re-election in the House, and there's 3 in the Senate. I mean, you've got 17 total incumbents that aren't coming back.
And that's a lot. We've heard that there's potentially going to be more. I expect to see kind of more as we move along a little bit closer to the filing period.
Sure.
Another big story I want to hit real quick and do some update on is, you know, speaking of vaccine mandates, not only did legislation to ban employer vaccine mandates die, but we also saw some developments right now in some of those big private employers in Texas. Specifically, we'll talk about real quick here, Southwest Airlines, we talked about last week. They have said, this is interesting, they've said that they have reversed their position. So Southwest Airlines implemented a vaccine mandate for its employees and said that essentially, if you wanted to apply for an exemption, you're going to be put on unpaid leave while we figure that out and process it. Well, you had a lot of people standing up, you had protests out there, folks saying that, and they've said they've changed their course and will not be doing unpaid leave. I say all that because you actually saw the Texas Freedom Coalition actually put out what they say is a source, a tip from inside Southwest Airlines that has said that internally that's actually not what they're doing. So remains to be seen there. But, you know, speaking of, but not just planes, we've also got trains where Union Pacific, which hires about over 5,000 Texans, is going to be affected by this Joe Biden vaccine mandate.
Sure.
And that actually has some really big implications. I mean, it's not just trains.
Sure. I mean, I think all of this can be read as, like, you know, the movement of people, the movement of supplies, everything is already kind of facing this slowdown, right? Mm-hmm. I think you've seen that national media and state media report that, you know, as we go into the holiday season, certainly that's a concern.
Yeah.
And then you've got the potential for walkouts, strike, like all of these things kind of playing out, if you will, over vaccine mandates. It creates a potential hostile issue.
Well, right? In both of these situations, too, you've got the unions that are actually standing up against these mandates. Unions that are typically not on the side of freedom, right?
Sure.
Are actually saying, no, we don't want our employees subject to these mandates. And, you know, in the case of Southwest Airlines and Union Pacific, they're both standing up against that.
Right.
Again, you know, this is something that we've seen is being done in Florida that they're working on, something that Governor Abbott so far has said, not said that he will call a special session for.
That's right. It's yet to be seen.
Yet to be seen. Well, we'll be following that, see if we get our fourth special session here in the few coming days, maybe coming weeks. We'll see. Thanks for catching us up on all that, Jeremy. Now, moving down a little bit south, that's right, south down to the border where thousands of illegal aliens are surging across, even as the state of Texas and Governor Greg Abbott says he's doing, he's putting resources down there to stop it. But what is actually being done and what should be done? Well, I visited earlier this week with former ICE agent Victor Avila to discuss exactly that. Check it out. Victor Avila, thank you so much for joining us. And if you could please just give folks a little bit of an introduction about your background.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm Victor Avila. I'm a retired ICE Homeland Security Investigation Special Agent. I served most of my career on the border, born and raised in El Paso, and also worked on the other side of the border in Ciudad Juarez and in Mexico City, and also abroad in Europe. And so I bring a very unique and perspective look at our border security crisis. I'm also a subject matter expert in human trafficking. And so I look a lot of what's happening on our open borders crisis right now, just not just with that, but as well with the cartels that I also keep a close eye on as they continue to affect not only our state, but the rest of our country.
And no doubt we're seeing that, especially, I mean, we've been seeing it for a long time, but especially this year, we've seen a big surge in illegal crossings at the southern border, even particularly here in Texas, where it's been in the news a lot. Explain, first of all, why are we seeing this sudden surge take place and start to pop up in the news now?
This is no surprise that this is the open borders invitation by the Biden administration. And I'm kind of stopping to saying it, an open borders policy is actually a no borders policy, which is a big difference. And by the numbers that you mentioned, you know, over 200,000 in the last couple of months, we're still waiting to see the official numbers for September. But I think I saw even today it was 1.7 million officially that have been detected. But I could tell you right now, firsthand experience, and by my own account of the visits that I've done to the border, I just returned from spending a week down there a week and a half ago. I think it's double or more than that of actual people that have come into this country illegally just in the last few months. And so it might be close to 3 million or more. And so it is because of that. It is because of the elimination of the prior administration's policies that were in place, and a lot of other factors at the same time that have come together and created this chaos. And it's not just a crisis anymore. It's basically an invasion.
Mm-hmm. What about the Mexican government's role in this?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that, because one of my things that I've been pushing forward is to have that contact with Mexico, because as you and I speak right now, there are tens of thousands of Haitians and other individuals in Tapachula that are struggling with Mexican immigration officials, whether or not they're going to be allowed to go through this, the country of Mexico. Guess what? To our country. And they seem to be approaching the United States with some sort of entitlement. Like once they get through Mexico, they know for a fact they're going to be led into the U.S. And Mexico has a huge role to play here that has been ignored, I think, for the last several months, even though the Secretary of Homeland Security was in Mexico last week. Mm-hmm. And even and I have some information from people that were present in that meeting and those high level meetings. You would think that the U.S. went to go ask or demand of Mexico to step up their enforcements on their side of the border. But it was quite the opposite. We basically just went over there to offer them more money under the Merida Initiative, which I worked under when I was stationed in Mexico. And where has that gotten us? Absolutely nowhere. We still have the big problem with the cartels, the crime, and obviously the illegal immigration coming through Mexico. Mexico just has not decided to enforce their own immigration laws that they have in their own country. All these people that are coming into the U.S. are also illegally present in Mexico. And so we must engage Mexico in a way where we have to get their cooperation to do their side and their enforcement on their end of the border.
So that's on Mexico's side. I want to pivot towards the U.S. side. First, you know, from the federal government, you sort of alluded to it before, but you know, under this administration, I mean, is there any expectation that they're going to do what needs to be done to crack down on this?
I could tell you just a few months ago, the flat answer was no. But now it's no, but at least with some hope, because I've seen some of the pressure get to them. For example, and with the help of the courts, the Migrant Protection Protocol, the Remain in Mexico policy is supposed to be in effect right now. And yet they have, the Biden administration continues to fight that, even though that would benefit the United States. It seems to me that they're on the wrong side of protecting the United States citizen, but they're supposed to be implementing MPP and have people start remaining in Mexico while they seek their asylum. But now they're doing it with caveats. Is it going to be family units only? Is it going to be just a single adult? Is it, you know, it should be just everyone remaining on that side of the border or in their home country to request this asylum. But we'll see how that implements here in the next few days. And so there's, I see some pressure coming to them, the meetings in Mexico, yet it hasn't developed to the actual enforcement of our immigration laws at the border. Eventually, we saw just a few weeks ago the tens of thousands of Haitians coming in. And it was, by the way, it wasn't just Haitians. It's people from 150 different countries that are coming in into our United States of America. And so I'm not going to leave it up to the border, to the U.S. federal government at this point to enforce that right now by any means.
And so that leaves us in Texas, of course, big, you know, border with Mexico. We've seen a lot of these crossings happen right here in the Lone Star State. There's been a renewed focus that you've seen from the governor and somewhat from the state legislature on the border. But has any of the stuff that they've done in recent months, be it Operation Lone Star or any of those projects, had an effect down there?
Absolutely not. And I wish it would. And I wish our governor would step up and actually enforce the protection of the sovereignty of our state of Texas and not allow the illegal immigration to come into the state of Texas and protect our borders. And for some reason, there's hesitation in doing that. I've been down there, like I told you, I spent a week down there. I talked to the National Guard members, the Border Patrol agents themselves, and a lot of citizens and business owners that are basically fed up. And all we want is enforcement. And the National Guard that's down there right now, although they're there, they're in presence only, and sometimes even assisting the illegals from coming up from the river. And that's not what I want to see. My deployment, my definition of a deployment of the National Guard or Texas Guard is to be fully armed at the river, denying entry to illegal aliens, because it's not just the migrant worker that we might be compassionate with and a humanitarian cause. It's the national security issue and public safety to not just Texas, but the rest of the country because of the terrorism that we face. Look at what happened in Afghanistan. The Taliban knows. When I was in Mexico, I interviewed the special interest aliens that are in Mexico, and they have patiently been waiting for a time like this to be allowed to come into the country, and they will camouflage themselves into these caravans to be allowed in entry into the United States.
So the million-dollar question then is, what can Texas be doing right now? What could the governor be doing to not just sort of assist or process these illegal crossings, but to actually stop them and to deter them?
And that's absolutely. So first is not to do that, not to allow them in to begin with and deploy the National Guard, but actually allow them. Remember when he put the vehicles and he parked all those DPS vehicles in Del Rio after the Haitians had come in? And well, that's not the way it works. He should have put those vehicles before to deny entry. So we know he could block these certain areas. Let's block these certain areas from the immigrants from coming in, especially where the cartels are coming, bringing them over on the rafts. Let's block them. Let's not allow them to come in. Let's have our DPS. Let's work in conjunction with Border Patrol, but to deny entry. Because once they come in, once we take custody of them, we know that under the Biden administration, it's a catch and release process, and we're just avoiding the inevitable, and they're going to be released. We need to not allow them to come in. Also, there's nothing that says that the governor cannot go talk to the president of Mexico. He needs to go engage in Mexico and tell him, listen, we're going to start deterring some of this traffic, some of this commercial traffic that's coming in. We're going to sanction Mexico. You're not going to be allowed to use our Texas highways. You're not going to be allowed to smuggle and use the buses and all these illegal aliens to transport through the state of Texas as a springboard to get these illegal aliens throughout the rest of the country. There's a lot that the state of Texas can do, but there's a hesitation from Governor Abbott from doing it.
Why do you think that is? This is kind of last question here. Why do you think it is that there's a hesitation that we've seen from the governor to go that extra length to go actually stop this?
I don't know if it's political. I don't know if it's because it's election year. It shouldn't matter to me. To me, it should matter the protection and the safety of the citizens of Texas and protecting our borders. Let's not forget the drugs and the cartels, the violence that we've seen. Just when I was there last week, I got a picture from one of the ranchers that was taken. He took a picture of a cartel member on his ranch at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, fully armed. These cartels are on the Texas side as well. And so we face criminal justice problems, healthcare in our schools. We're going to see the impact not just in our state, but like I said, around our country. And I don't understand the hesitation. So I hope that the other candidates that are running will not have that hesitation to do what's right for the state of Texas.
Victor Avila, thank you so much for joining. Hope we can have you again on soon as this issue continues to develop.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And we will have Victor on again to give us some more updates. I know that this is such a big, we could probably spend hours talking about that issue. And so I appreciate him coming on and joining us today. Well, some housekeeping things real quick. I want to let folks know, again, we've got the Conservative Leader Awards coming up December 4th in Irving, Texas. All right, this is our annual event where we honor the conservative leaders, not politicians, okay? The actual conservative leaders, boots on the ground folks that are doing the work. That's gonna be December 4th in Irving, Texas. You can grab your tickets at texasscorecard.com/CLA2021. That's texasscorecard.com/CLA2021. And while you're at our Texas Scorecard website, why don't you share the fellowship, all right? Do you know somebody between the ages of 18 to 25 that would like to spend a semester here working with us here at Texas Scorecard? We've got our paid fellowship. We're now accepting applications for spring, summer, and fall of 2022. You can find that application and more information about the program at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. Quick shout out to everybody watching here. I've got Tiffany watching from Deer Park. Always great to see Tiffany on here. Jeff watching from Indiana. Angela tuning in from DFW. Billy watching from Dallas. Rita from Brazoria County. Sheena in Kinney County, close there to the border. And Teresa in Tarrant County. Thank you so much to everybody for watching. If you have any questions, you're watching the show later, please feel free to drop them down here in the comments. Be sure to like, to share, send to your friends. But for right now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. While you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.